there, and welcome back to another episode of The Thing. It's People Pleaser. That's right. That's what it is. From a blanket fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. And today, we are talking about shifting the Overton window. I'm still doing it from the one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, from the Blanket Fort recording studio. 6 years later, still going strong. I actually think the podcast is closer to 7 years old at this point. Lots to talk about on the show. First thoughts for, before we actually get into the main topic of the show, I just, could we like spend the briefest moment talking about this Turning Point USA tour and just the weird way that conservatives perform what they think normal expressions of grief are. Forgot to mention we have the TikTok Digital Studio audience here. We got about 80 people in the TikTok Digital Studio audience. Hello, everybody. While we're talking to the TikTok Digital Studio audience, we might as well talk to the YouTube audience as well and just let you know that patreon.com/AustinArcher is only $1 a month. It's super, super cheap. You get $10 for an entire year. Great deal. And you get all the content that I make, often with bonus content. Everything is posted early. The podcast is longer. It's an extended cut of the podcast. You get all the stuff for $1. So go over and check that out. It's linked in all of my bios and in the description of this video. Okay, this Turning Point USA tour that Erica Kirk is currently on, and just the strange behavior of the Charlie Kirk faithful. I already made an episode of the podcast about this, an episode called, you know, How Conservatives Cosplay Normal Human Emotions. I made that episode 2 weeks after Charlie Kirk died, and how they were all pretending to have like a normal human reaction, but it's just so weird because we know what they're normally like. But I think it's only gotten weirder. You don't even know how to pretend to grieve normally. Like, first of all, there was the Donald Trump thing where they asked him like 2 days after Charlie died. They just threw a softball question to him on the White House lawn. They were like, "Sir, how are you holding up after your friend died?" And he was like, "I'm doing great. Did you see that they broke ground on my ballroom?"
"My condolences on the loss of your friend Charlie Kirk. May I ask, sir, personally, how are you holding up over the last day and a half, sir?"
"I think very good. And by the way, right there, you see all the trucks. They've just started construction of the new ballroom for the White House, which is something they've been trying to get, as you know, for about 150 years.
All he had to do is just be like, "You know, it's been tough. You know, there's a lot of people in my administration right now who are really heartbroken, and our thoughts and our hearts and our prayers are with the Kirk family right now. And it's, you know, I believe that we're going to come through this stronger on the other side." Like, it's just like the easiest possible thing you can do. And he just was like, "I'm fine. I'm actually doing great. I'm building a giant ballroom. I tore down half the White House for it." Then there's Erica Kirk, right? I love the fact that all over the internet, conservatives were like, "It's disgusting watching liberals celebrate the death of Charlie Kirk. It's just how you guys are celebrating this." And then to watch like what they think celebrating apparently isn't, that like apparently wearing full sequin suits and coming out on stage to a pyrotechnics display and everyone like screaming and cheering and everyone decked out in like full American flag suits and waving flags and like apparently that's not celebrating. Apparently that's how you grieve. I made a joke on Instagram today where I was like, it's like they are this close to putting her in one of those wire setups that Pink uses at her concerts and just launching her into the sky every time she comes out on stage and she just does like 14 backflips. And like they should do that to the AI We Are Charlie Kirk song. Just Erica Kirk taking off and just, "We are Charlie Kirk, we carry the flame," and everyone just, "Whoa!" And she's just holding like two Roman candles in each hand, just firing them off, just being like, "I love you, baby. We miss you, Charlie." Did you see how they had the photo booth, you guys? Did you see how they set up the booth where he got shot and they had people taking photos in it at one of these things? Just thumbs up with a MAGA hat in the booth that he died in. What the fuck are you guys doing? This is like if you like literally set up a Lego recreation of the two towers, you know, and they were like 7 feet tall each, and you just did a photo op of like people standing in between them like, yeah, never forget 9/11, man. Like, what are you doing? And what it is just like they don't know what it looks like to respond to something in a normal, healthy way. So they're like, you guys are all celebrating. And it's like, cool. We're not like sad at all that he's dead, but what the fuck are you guys doing? Because if you think this is what grief looks like, I just don't think they're capable of the emotion grief. Like, I don't think they're capable of being upset. Like, I just think that like they are so shielded in their psyche from ever experiencing any kind of upsetting or negative emotion that they're just sort of like, well, I feel a big feeling about the fact that Charlie Kirk's not alive. I guess like I should dress in a full American flag suit and start lighting off fireworks. Is that what you do when you're sad about? I don't know. Like, is that right? I'm pretty sure. Like, it's just so insane. I also pointed out the fact that she looks like Pennywise the Clown. Sorry, she does. I mean, I'm going to throw a video on the screen for anyone who's watching the video version of the show right now. And like, tell me it's not Pennywise. You're telling me that's not Pennywise? I saw that and the first thought I had in my head was like, no way, that's Penny. I immediately was like, holy shit, why is she doing it like that? Why is she starting with her head down and then slowly raising her head with this like, hey, everybody, smile with the like heavy dark mascara around the eyes if she doesn't want me to think that she's one of the iterations of Pennywise just shape-shifting into something else? Why is she doing that then? Okay, that's my little preamble role. Let's actually get into the real show. So the title of the show, Shifting the Overton Window. So recently, Mitt Romney, remember Mitt Romney? Remember good old Mitt Romney? Good old, you know, nice hair. Jason Sudeikis played him on SNL. He ran for president against Barack Obama in 2012. You remember that guy? Mitt Romney wrote an op-ed in the New York Times where he was basically saying, I think we should tax rich people more. Rich people like me. I think that rich people in our country, he said, not only are they taking advantage of loopholes in the tax code, he described them as caverns in the tax code, massive craters in the tax code that are allowing people to get away with insane amounts of wealth hoarding. Whoa, Mitt Romney, more like Mitt Bernie. Bernie, right? Am I right, you guys? More like Bernie Romney, more like Bern Romsders. Is Mitt Romney woke now? Is he infected with the woke virus? Does he understand why it's cool to be progressive now? Is that what this means? The answer is no. It's cool. Hey, in 2025, we got to take any W that we can take, and it's cool, like, to like have a guy who calls himself a Republican, anyone who identifies as a Republican, admit the obvious fact that like, yeah, billionaires should be paying more in taxes. Like that should not be a controversial take. That should not be a radical take. And it's not a radical take. Mitt Romney is not woke. Mitt Romney is not progressive. Mitt Romney is exactly who Mitt Romney has always been. Mitt Romney knows enough about economic philosophy and, you know, just sort of how political tax codes should work if you want a somewhat functioning society in order to be able to like do this math and do this arithmetic and figure out that like, oh, people like me should be paying significantly more than we currently are. And we could pay for we could cover a lot of the societal burden with our wealth. But that does not make Mitt Romney woke. That does not make Mitt Romney someone who is like now converted to the left. And it's just what it means is the Overton window has heavily shifted. Surprise, surprise. Nobody's surprised by this, right? the Donald Trump political era has pushed the political Overton window in America so far to the extreme right, it has had the result of making someone like Mitt Romney appear to be significantly more progressive than he actually is. I mean, all that being said, I'm at a point that I think most people should be at this point where it's like, if you came to me today and said, we can switch out Mitt Romney for Donald Trump tomorrow, do you want to do it? I'd say, in a heartbeat. Absolutely. 100%. I would so much rather have that Republican be president than the current Republican that is president. And it has to do with resetting where the Overton window is. Because what the Overton window is, basically, in a nutshell, this is another word for it, it's the viability window. Like, it is the acceptability window. It's the window in which the majority of voters, the majority of citizens who engage with the political process, what the majority of them see as acceptable behavior, viable behavior, and it's also the window for the political parties. It's where they know the line is, okay? So, like, what is a viable political position to have? And it has to be inside of that window if your position is going to have a shot at being electable. Leftists are not incorrect when they say that Democrats are not, like, modern Democrats are not truly left. Most of them are centrists or even right of center. When it comes to how the actual political left functions on the global scale, America doesn't have any mainstream political representation for anyone on the true left. We have centrists and people who are center right, identifying as our version of the left, because they're just on the further left side of our current Overton window from the people who are currently in power. And those people are almost all the way on the right. It actually goes further. I think I've said in the past, like, oh, Donald Trump's as far as it goes. That's wrong. It goes further. Like, you can actually go a little bit further into, like, people like Nick Fuentes and stuff. The only big difference between Donald Trump and his cronies and Nick Fuentes is that they don't say the quiet part out loud as often as Nick Fuentes does. Like, Nick Fuentes and his team, those people, the Groypers, that kind of crowd, they're willing to just openly own their white supremacy and their Nazi beliefs. And Donald Trump and his cronies share all of those same beliefs and are using all of those same tactics. They just don't always accidentally say the quiet part out loud. They try their best to speak in coded language and dog whistles. I mean, they do let the mask slip from time to time, actually quite often. But yeah, it's really, 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 really far on the spectrum. It's so far, like, you wouldn't, at the time when Mitt Romney was running for president, that kind of a position would not have been viable in a primary for the Republicans. There were people who were more extreme, like Rick Santorum, and people who were pushing for more extreme ideas. Then Donald Trump comes along, and he basically just, you know, it's like in football, when linemen do those drills where they have to, like, push the sled, where they have to hit the sled and just drive it and just push it back across the field. That's what Donald Trump did with the Overton window. Usually the Overton window, it shifts kind of like this on, like, a four-year basis. It's just sort of like a little tug of war, like, back and forth. Donald Trump took it and just went boom and just bulldozed it all the way down to the point where, like, you know, there still were some more moderate people in his first administration, in Trump 1.0, but by the time we got to Trump 2.0 with Project 2025 and all the loyalists, and they were like, we've got everybody now, we're gonna have loyalists as the head of the FBI, loyalists as the head, what, I always forget this one, the guy that is in charge of FCC, I always forget, but loyalists in charge of our, like, the health organization. So people are like, oh, the CDC now says that there's no substantial evidence the vaccines don't cause autism. And it's like, that's because the guy who gives the CDC their marching orders is a loyalist to the Donald Trump administration and an insane person, an ex-heroin addict with brain worms. That's why that is. That's why that's happening. But anyway, we all know the Overton window has been pushed all the way down. So the question is, how do we get it to go back? By the way, As far as Mitt Romney is concerned, like, again, way to go, Mitt Romney, writing this op-ed in 2025. You know, good job. I bet if we were to actually probe Mitt Romney and say, like, what do you mean? Because he talked about how he supports taxing billionaires on unrealized gains, that anyone who's worth over $100 million, he basically talked about the exact same tax code that Kamala Harris was proposing, where anyone who's worth over at least $100 million should have their capital gains taxed. But I bet if we asked him, like, how much, he'd probably be in the vicinity of, like, 5 to 10%, maybe not even that much. He would still have a conservative number, is my point. And my personal belief is that it should be far more aggressive than that. I actually believe that we could have universal health care and, you know, food and housing and all of our basic needs met, infrastructure, all of those things, if like 500 people were just taxed between 60 and 90% on their unrealized gains and on their income. And all of those people, by the way, the people that I'm thinking of could afford to be taxed that much, and they would still be the wealthiest motherfuckers in the world by a long, long, long shot. And so I would personally support something much, much, much more aggressive. Mitt Romney at least has the common sense to realize, like, oh, we should take a little bit of the money that's just sitting there, and the capital gains that they're going to pass to their kids, and it's just going to become untaxed generational wealth. We should at least take a little bit of that, right? And I'm like, no, we should take a fuck ton of it. We should take as much of it as we can get our hands on. But, you know, like, we're still in theory agreeing that at least some of it should be taxed, whereas the current far right is like, none of it should be taxed. Okay, the question, how do we shift the window over? There are two major ways that you can do this, and there are two conflicting ideas on the left about how to accomplish this when it comes to long-term political strategy. The one way that you could do it is you could say, we refuse to vote for the current Democrat Party unless they meet our demands and move further left. They have to meet us where we are. They can't keep moving to the center and to the center right. They can't keep inching right to try to court moderates and you know, maybe never Trumper moderate Republicans. As long as they're doing that, we need to tell them, we're not going to let you win if you do that. You need to move to the left and meet us further left. That's the first way you could do it. The second way, because if you do that, then they have to move over. And basically what happens with the Overton window, with the viability window, is every time people on the edges of it have to inch over one direction or the other, it drags the entire window over. It doesn't just widen the window. Think of it as like, it's finite. Like it has a finite amount of width that it can stand at any given time for what is viable within that window. So when someone on the extreme edge of it pushes it one direction, it drags the entire thing. So if we were to somehow force Democrats to move left by saying, we won't vote for you unless you do this, it would drag the entire window this way. The other way to move the window, obviously, is to say to the far right, who is currently in power, we are not going to allow this to be a viable political position. We are going to make sure that as long as you are this extreme, you will lose every single election you participate in. And they'll have no choice but to go, fine, we'll tone it down a little bit, and we'll start acting like Mitt Romney used to act in 2012. We'll come back to being a little bit more level-headed, a little bit more sane, and a little bit less of full-blown Nazis about all of our policies. And again, when one side of it moves, the other side moves too. It inches this way. Those are your two options of how you can slide the Overton window to the left. A lot of terminally online leftists, these are the people who refused to vote for Kamala Harris in 2024, people who were Jill Stein supporters or who believed that a protest vote where they abstained from voting was the best strategy in order to move the Overton window left and, you know, accomplish their long-term political goals. A lot of those people would obviously support option one. They would say, we need to refuse to vote for Democrats until they move further left. They need to be serving the political interests of their progressive voting bloc. Most of their voters are progressives who want more progressive policies out of them. So if they want our votes, they need to move over and meet us. That's what those people would say. My strategy would be, got to win elections. You got to win elections. So which, and what that means is you got to vote for Democrats so that the people on the right, this position is no longer viable. You can't win by being Donald Trump. You can't win as Stephen Miller. You can't win as J.D. Vance. You can't win as these monsters over here. If you want to be competitive and viable, you're going to have to move to the left, and the whole window moves to the left. The reason why my option is right, like is correct, is just math. Like, that's all there is to it. We've already been through this. Like, this is a conversation we've already had multiple times on this channel. I don't know how many more times I'm going to have to point this out. In theory, both of those options should be on the table. The problem is, like, the data is in, we have the numbers, and we had this before the 2024 election. We already knew this, that it was like, okay, cool. The people who want to say, let's not vote for Kamala Harris, let's refuse to vote for Kamala Harris, let's vote for Jill Stein, or let's abstain, you don't have the numbers, unfortunately. Wish you did. I wish you did. Wish you had anywhere even close to the numbers you would need in order for that to be a workable solution, but you don't have the numbers. You didn't even get 1 million votes. Like, you were all hoping to get like 2% or something of the voting block so that you could get her on the ballot the next time around. You didn't get 1%. Kamala Harris got 75 million votes and Jill Stein got like 700,000. You weren't even in the realm of having your strategy be even remotely realistic. I really, it frustrates me to no end when these people go, your strategy lost too. We both lost. Like, your strategy lost just as much as mine did. No, it didn't. Mine was like 98% of the way to working. Yours was zero. It was like 0.1% of the way to working. The math just doesn't math. Like, it doesn't math in your favor. Unfortunately, I actually agree as a leftist that, like, it would be cool if we could say, we're not going to vote for any Democrat candidates unless they move left and meet us where we are. The problem is, our voting coalition doesn't seem to support that strategy. The majority of our voting coalition seems to support the strategy of, let's just try to win with the Democrats we have now so that we can starve out the viability of what the extreme right is trying to do and force the window to move that way. And it just makes more sense from a pure numbers standpoint to go with the odds, to play the percentages. And it's not like a close percentage. Like, it would be one thing if Jill Stein got like 20 million votes and Kamala Harris got 55 million votes. In that scenario, Kamala Harris still absolutely trounces Jill Stein, but at least Jill Stein makes some noise as an option. It really like shows up in a way where it's like, okay, we might be talking about something here. Like, these are real numbers that maybe potentially with enough massaging could be competitive down the line. We're not even talking about that, though. We're not talking about an idea that even has the possibility of being competitive in 2 years or 4 years or 8 years or 12 years, okay? You have a much better chance winning the election if you just refuse to vote for the Republican on the ticket. Not refuse to vote for the Democrat. Make sure the Republican loses. Make sure the far right political position is not viable. Starve out the viability of that position so that it has no choice but to move left if it wants to be competitive in elections. And then the whole window moves left. And we're just so much closer to that being a realistic option than we are the other option. Unfortunately, this isn't like because I prefer it this way. I'm not saying this because I'm like, I like it this way. I like voting for people who barely represent my political interests and values and my long-term political goals, who are just like marginally better than the opposition. It's not that I like it that way. It's just that it is what is. I've talked about this multiple times on the show as well. The reason why it's really hard to get the voting coalition on the left to accept option one is because the voting coalition on the left is massively, mind-bogglingly diverse. The voting coalition on the right is like 89 to 90% white, Christian, heteronormative, conservative people. Like, that's it. And it's incredibly homogenous when it comes to its demographics, when it comes to its ideology, when it comes to its religious beliefs. It's a very, very homogenous voting block, and it's really easy to get them all on the same page and pulling in the same direction. Whether that is Mitt Romney or Donald Trump, they'll fall in and they'll do their jobs. It's a lot harder to get the 80 million or so votes you need to get on the left in order to win federal elections, because the left is everybody else. The right is white, heteronormative, Christian, conservative people, and the left is everybody else. All the other kinds of people. All the other kinds of people in the world are the people who make up the left. You can't just come to them with like, well, we all want the same things, right? We're all socialists who and communists who want to take down capitalism and replace it with a much better system and abolish the police force. We're all on the same page about that? No, unfortunately we're not. I'm on that page with you. I'm with you. I'm with you, comrade. I'm down for the cause. It's just that, like, in order for us to be able to move in that direction, we gotta fucking win elections. We gotta work with our coalition. And our coalition is very, very diverse. And not everyone in our coalition is as progressive as you are. They're not all as far along down the pipeline as you are. And you gotta be okay with that. You gotta work with people who are just like a little left of center, but they can't stand Trump and they don't want him to win, but they're willing to vote for a Democrat. You gotta be willing to work with those people. You just have to be, because the numbers support that idea. The numbers say if you do that, we can win. We can win and we can starve out that position and we can move the window to the left. Let's talk about Jasmine Crockett. Right now, a lot of these people I'm talking about, the Jill Stein people, the protest voters, are trying to sabotage and torpedo Jasmine Crockett's candidacy. Jasmine Crockett is currently running for a Senate seat in Texas that is currently held by the incumbent Republican Senator John Cornyn. And a lot of these same people are going, she's not progressive enough. No, sorry. And they're saying things like, you know, there's a lot of talk about litmus tests. Like, hey, if your litmus test isn't genocide, if your litmus test isn't Palestine, if she's not hard enough, if she's not being clear enough on Palestine and being clear that, like, if elected, she's going to go hard on Israel, that she's going to hammer Netanyahu and make sure that we get the solutions that we want in Gaza, then she's out. She's out. She's not progressive enough. Like, hey, I agree with you. That's the goal, right? That's what we all want. That's what our shared political values are. The problem is, in order for her to be able to do any of that shit, in order for her to be able to put pressure on anybody, in order for you to be able to pressure her to enact policies that you want to see, she has to win first. It doesn't matter what she says she's gonna do when she wins, if she loses. She can tell you anything, just like Jill Stein. She can say, oh, if I'm elected, don't worry. I'll take care of it. I'll make sure that what's happening in Gaza ends the day after I'm elected. Don't worry. She can make that promise till she's blue in the face. It doesn't matter if she doesn't win. The reason why Jill Stein was able to give you that promise, was able to promise you that, is because Jill Stein knew she didn't ever have to worry about making good on the promise. She fucking admitted that. Her campaign literally was like, we know we're not going to win. Our only goal is to make sure Kamala Harris loses. And again, I've talked about this ad nauseum on the channel. The only other way of phrasing that is that Jill Stein's campaign knew they were going to lose, and their only goal was to secure a victory for Donald Trump. That's just what those words mean. When Jill Stein has people with signs at her rallies saying that, like, we need to defeat Harris, we need to make sure Harris doesn't win, the only other way to say that in a two-way race is, we need to secure a victory for Donald Trump. That's just what that means. And Jill Stein can tell you that she's gonna fulfill your wish list all day long. She knows she doesn't actually have to. She knows that there's not a chance in hell that her feet are ever going to be held to the fire to make good on those campaign promises, because she's not going to win. First things first, You've got to win. So if you want to push Jasmine Crockett to be more progressive, she got to win first. She's got to take the seat from John Cornyn, because you know who else isn't going to do what you want them to do about Palestine? John fucking Cornyn. John Cornyn doesn't give a shit about it. Now we come to the whole thing of just like, well, they're indistinguishable anyway. If Democrats are just center or center right, then what's the then they're just Republican light. And what's the difference between those two things? There is a difference. There is a difference between Mitt Romney and Donald Trump. Mitt Romney is Republican light. He's Republican. He's conservative. He is, by no stretch of the imagination, a leftist or a progressive. But he's not the same kind of Republican as Donald Trump is. He's Republican light. And that is an improvement. And when we're talking about shifting the parameters of what is viable in our political system, you gotta take the fucking victories as they're presented to you. You've got to work with the conditions you are given. A lot of these people during the 2024 election liked to use this analogy. They would say Harris voters are the kind of people who buy a car and then negotiate the price after they've already bought it. Now, I have a history of roasting people who pedantically pull apart analogies when they don't work as a perfect one-to-one example of the thing that they're talking about. But this is a dog shit analogy. This is a really, really bad analogy, because it only makes sense if any car is available to you. If you're at a car dealership and you can have any of the cars there, and you're just choosing, for some reason, to pick a car that's overpriced and not very great, and then you just figure you'll negotiate afterward. But that's not actually the situation we're in at all. That's not how voting works. But I'll stick with the analogy of buying a car. This is much more apt to the situation American voters actually find themselves in. It's kind of like we're all wandering in the desert, and we have been for a very, very long time, and our skin is blistering and sunburned, and we're starving, and we are dying of thirst. And every 2 to 4 years, we come across a car dealership that has like two not great vehicles, like two pretty shitty cars in it, you know? But like the dealer's just like, these are the two cars that I got. And we're all like, we have to get a car so that we can move closer to a place where we can get some water and start rebuilding. And maybe we can even get a better car. And basically, like, the two cars that are offered to us, they're both beaters. They're both like not great options. You know, one of the cars is like super old, the bumper's fallen off. The seatbelts don't work. The AC doesn't work. You know, sometimes the brakes go in and out, and it's a little bit dangerous. So it's not a great option at all. But the other car is like, the seats are cacti. Like, in order to drive the car, you have to sit on a bed of cactus needles, and like hot oil periodically sprays out of orifices in the car and sprays you in the face, and the car like catches on fire from time to time, and it doesn't drive you closer to the destination you're trying to get to. It drives you further into the desert. And these people are literally just like, they're both bad cars. I hate both these cars. I don't want either one of these cars. It's hot. We're in the desert. I want a car with working air conditioning. And it's like, hey, dude, we all want the fucking car with the working air conditioning. We don't get that fucking option right now, okay? There's a town a little bit further down the way that does have cars with air conditioning, and we can get to that town in this other shittier car. I know that they're both shitty cars. I know that you don't like either one of them. I don't like either one of them either. But pretending like they're indistinguishable from each other because they're both bad is so beyond stupid. Like, are you fucking kidding me? We are a year into the second Trump administration, and anybody who cannot come clean with themselves and admit that we would be better off with Kamala Harris as president right now is just not a serious person. You're just not a serious person politically if you can't be honest about that, if you can't admit that. You can say all day, she would have just been, you know, this, but like slightly less bad, and that's not good enough. Slightly less bad is better. It's better. And it's not even worth debating. It's so fucking stupid. It's so stupidly obvious which one is better. Yeah, it's a beater car. Yeah, the bumper fell off. Yeah, the AC doesn't work and we're gonna be sweating the whole way there. But this car has the opportunity to get us a little bit closer to the place when we can start having slightly better options. And when we get to the place where we can start having slightly better options, we can move to the next place where we have even more slightly better options. And then the next place and the next place. And this is the problem with these kinds of leftists, is they actually fully lack any kind of comprehensive long-term political strategy. I have had full-on conversations with friends who are this kind of leftist where I've just asked them the simple question, what are your long-term political goals? And they look at me like I'm speaking a different language. They're like, what do you mean by that question? And I'm like, play it out for me, 20 years, 40 years. Like, what, in your ideal scenario, how does this play out? How does, like, refusing to vote for Democrats and refusing to vote for anyone at all who's ever taken AIPAC money or anything like that, how does it play out? What is the ultimate goal? Some of them sometimes will just go like, it's revolution, baby. We're trying to topple this thing. They're accelerationists, right? Or they want to accelerate the demise of the empire. They want to hasten the revolution. To those people, I say, first of all, it is ridiculous and heinously inhumane and gross. The cavalier way you are willing to throw the safety and well-being of the most marginalized and most vulnerable communities under the bus with your accelerationist philosophy. Because in the event of some kind of violent, widespread revolution, disabled people, queer people, any kind of marginalized people, they'd be the first to, they would be the hardest hit and like the first casualties to fall. And it's often like privileged white people who are like, revolution, baby, privileged white leftists online who talk a big game about that. I find your cavalier disregard for the most vulnerable communities really, really gross. I also have this problem with when you refuse to vote for someone like Jasmine Crockett, because I'm just like, okay, cool. So we're willing to just throw all of the vulnerable communities who live in Texas under the bus because Jasmine Crockett right now isn't promising you all of the perfect things you want her to promise in order to earn your vote. Cool. I think it's kind of gross the way that you claim to be progressive, but you're also saying everyone's safety who's more marginalized than you is expendable in order for you to get to play out your shitty political strategy. But anyway, and the second thing about accelerationism is I don't believe you. Like, I just am like, bullshit. When you're like, revolution, baby, I'm like, get about it then. Go out there and do it. Do you know how long I've been having political conversations online with these people and they've been telling me that they're planning the revolution? Get out there, Che. Get out there, Guevara. Go fucking do it then. Stop talking about it and go do it. Go pick up the Molotov and get to fucking work then. But they're not doing it. They're not doing it. They're not doing shit but talking about it online. So not only do I think your accelerationist philosophy is heinously cruel to all of the people more marginalized to you than you and really kind of disqualifies you as an actual progressive who's actually humane and actually cares about people, but also I think you're a chicken shit liar. I think you're a fucking coward who would never dare be on the front lines of a violent revolution. So that's my take about that. This person says, you've been to one protest in 6 fucking years. Not me. Couldn't be me. You're not talking about me, but you probably are talking about accelerationists. But yeah, that's the analogy. That's the actual analogy. You've got 2 cars that you're being offered, okay? And you want some magical third car that doesn't exist. I said this a lot during the 2024 election cycle. It's the trolley problem, right? You pull the lever, you're gonna run over 10 people. You don't pull the lever, you're gonna run over 100,000 people. In your mind, these choices are indistinguishable because either way, you're committing a terribly violent act that you want no part in. I either wash my hands of this, or you say, I vote that we turn the trolley into a jet that flies over both avenues. And the problem in either case is, like, you don't get to wash your hands of it. It's going to happen one way or another. And we don't have a viable path to turn the trolley into the jet that you want. What we do have is a chance at harm reduction. We have a viable shot at harm reduction, and we have a viable shot at inching toward the kind of society where we no longer have to make these kinds of choices, where we no longer have to be placed in these kinds of really unfortunate, really sad, really big bummer moral dilemmas. You know, oh, you guys want to buy the car and negotiate later? No, we need a fucking car. We're dying in the desert. We need a car. And only one of these cars has any shot at getting us anywhere near where we need to be. That's how you shift the Overton window. I rest my case, Your Honor. Let's talk to a jury of my peers over here in the TikTok digital studio audience. What's up, everybody? We got about 100 people here. Just a reminder to the people watching on YouTube, there is an extended version of this podcast on my Patreon, patreon.com/AustinArcher, where I keep in all of the content that I edit out for the public release. I always release this podcast early there. I release all of my content early there. I do Patreon exclusive content every single week that only the people on Patreon see. So if you like my content and you don't like that the algorithm hides it from you, patreon.com/AustinArcher. It's a dollar. It's $10 for an entire year. Go over there and do it if you want to support this work. Be about it, okay? What's up, TikTok digital studio audience? Eli says, thanks for defending us marginalized. You're welcome. I mean, I'm doing my best. Unfortunately, like, there's only so much I can do as an individual. Again, going back to this thing of, like, I don't like it. I don't like that the system is the way that it is. I don't like capitalism. I don't like that fascist Nazis are in the White House right now doing fascist Nazi stuff, and that my choice is between fascist Nazis doing Nazi things or, like, fascist light people who are, like, they're significantly less Nazi-ish. Like, they're way less of Nazis than the people that we have right now who are actually, like, open to being pressured on doing things more progressively. I don't like that. I don't enjoy that, but it is the situation. It's the reality of the situation that I'm trying to engage with. Eli also says, I'm a trans man in Texas, lost my 13 years on active duty career this year. That's the other thing, is, like, the people who don't understand what's at stake with this Jasmine Crockett race, that Jasmine Crockett is a real viable electable candidate, and she could be elected to a Senate seat in Texas. She could be a senator from fucking Texas. And if you can't understand the long-term benefits of having someone like Jasmine Crockett as a senator from Texas, the long-term benefits in federal elections and the long-term benefits legislatively for the entire country and for the state of Texas, again, I just don't think you're a serious person politically if you don't get that. These white online leftists who are these hardliners, they often live in blue states where they're protected by their own privilege. They're not going to lose their benefits like Eli is. They're not going to be hit the hardest if Jasmine Crockett doesn't win. And they don't stand to, like, reap the benefits of a Jasmine Crockett victory. The other thing is, like, it's Jasmine fucking Crockett, you guys. You're acting like she's Kristen Sinema. Of the establishment Democrats, she's one of, like, you can't do much better right now than Jasmine Crockett, AOC, and, like, maybe Pete Buttigieg. Like, that, and again, I'm a leftist. I'm not saying that those are, like, the best people in politics and that those are, that's the best. I'm saying of the viable people, the people who fit inside of the window of viability, the people who are electable, you can't really do much better than that. So we might as well be electing the best of the viable candidates so that we can keep hoping to push things further left. Somebody on my Patreon the other day said, online leftists are the most annoying people in the world, especially to other leftists. I identify as a leftist. I have all of the same political values and political goals as leftists. I hate fascism and capitalism just as much as any leftist does. But online leftists, the really, like, you know, exclusionary, self-righteous, sanctimonious ones, they identify me as, like, a full-blown neo-fascist, capitalist mouthpiece, shill shitlib, because I advocated for Kamala Harris in the 2024 election because she was the only viable option that wasn't Donald Trump. And because I understand math, they really are the most obnoxious people in the world. Like, they're more obnoxious to me than MAGA is, because MAGA people are just like, yeah, they're all dumbasses. Like, every time a MAGA person does something that's like completely head-assed, you're like, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. They're a cult of total dipshits. But when someone who like is at least smart enough to see the value of leftist policies and ideas and goals, but lacks the brain power to understand like really, really, really basic strategy, like the most basic logic ever, but then they also happen to be like so self-satisfied in their wrongness, like it does not matter how obviously wrong they are, they're so insistent that they're not wrong, they're just so like, no, we could have gotten that less than 1% up to the numbers that we needed to get, like for the voting coalition, we totally could have gotten that less than 1% that we got for Jill Stein. We totally could have gotten it there. It's like, no, you couldn't have, guys. No, you couldn't have. Just fucking admit it. You were wrong. You were wrong, and now everything is worse. You made a choice that made everything worse. That's what you did. And they're just like, no. AIPAC. No. If you disagree with me, you like AIPAC. If you disagree with me, you like Israel. Shut the fuck up. You're just like a MAGA person being like, oh, you guys love Bill Clinton. No, I fucking don't. Don't. Shut up. Christine P says, they didn't just destroy the states, they screwed the world. Ain't that the truth? Like, you guys owe Venezuela a massive apology. You had two candidates. One of the candidates had spoken extensively advocating for Palestinian safety and liberation. That candidate is Kamala Harris. And the other candidate said, I want to level it. I want to turn it into a parking lot. I want Trump Gaza Hotel, AI videos, and I want to, you know, like, do the gritty on the fallen rubble. And those were your two options, and you were like, they're the same. One of them's not good enough, and one of them is literally the Antichrist. They're the same. Oh my God. The Bacardi King now says, you're like a girl in cheetah, like a girl in cheetah print. This is something we need to talk about, is horseshoe theory. Because again, the online left, the terminally online leftists that I'm talking about, and I share a lot of the same political values and political goals. Like, we want to dismantle capitalism. We want to abolish police. We want universal healthcare. We want a society that actually takes care of its people. We want queer liberation. We're feminists, environmentalists. Jill Stein supporters and protest voters are the true blue MAGA, and they are so similar in their rhetorical argumentative strategies, their rhetorical argumentative tactics to MAGA. It's crazy. Like, the same way that MAGA always says TDS, they always go like, everyone on the left has TDF, TDS, liberals with their TDS, Democrats with their TDS, and like, TDS, if you don't know, means Trump derangement syndrome, and it's just sort of like, who has Trump derangement syndrome? Me, for hating Donald Trump because he's a pedophile and a serial rapist and like a career con artist and like a convicted felon who has enriched himself by lying about literally everything for his entire life, a demonstrable racist. I have TDS for that? Or does the person who has decided to make Donald Trump their entire personality, to deck their entire house out with Donald Trump decor, drive around in a truck covered in Donald Trump stickers with Donald Trump flags, wearing Donald Trump shirts with Donald Trump hats and Donald Trump shoes, reading their Donald Trump Bible, covering their ears with a tampon when Donald Trump gets fake shot in Donald Trump's stupid ear, who has Trump derangement syndrome? Like, everything they say is a projection. And then left, like these online leftists who are horseshoe theory, behaving exactly like MAGA, always call people like me blue MAGA because of like the whole blue no matter who thing, where they're just like, you're in a cult. You just vote for anyone with a D next to their name. Blue MAGA. But it's like, you guys actually behave like MAGA. And this right here, saying that I look like a girl and that's why my outfit is bad, like being like, you look like a girl. How much more like a MAGA chud could you possibly sound? Like, you claim to be a progressive and you're saying my outfit is bad because it's feminine? Because, like, boys shouldn't wear stuff like that? Honey, baby doll, what? Diva, you're on the left and you're saying that I need to conform to gender norms better in order to be dressed well, according to you? And I'm blue MAGA? Shut the fuck up. up. D30 says, I am not important. There aren't enough people in this chat not to see my messages. You're ignoring them to attack the easy argument. Sad AF. Again, like, so MAGA. Like, it's just like, it sounds exactly like something a MAGA Chud would write. It's crazy how much these people, everything about their personality is indistinguishable from MAGA trolls, except that, like, apparently they have progressive ideas when it comes to, like, long-term policy and the way that they would like to see society shaped. It's really hard to believe, though, because everything about their attitude is so, it just, like, it reeks of that MAGA Chud thing of being like, oh, you can't take down my argument. My argument is too good. Of course you're ignoring my argument to go after the easy ones. Sad. How much more like MAGA could you possibly sound? The Bacardi King says, I didn't say gender anything. Yeah, you did. And also, oh my God, this is great. Bacardi King just said you're wrong and misspelled your. Again, so MAGA, so MAGA, so MAGA. Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, let's try to find the important argument that D30 made that I'm ignoring. D30, I'm honestly scrolling so far back and I'm missing it. Oh, Cappy says he thinks you're making bills. Oh, I'm not. Okay, so it's that thing. Okay, so D30 thinks I'm a shill, thinks that I'm making like lots of AIPAC money and that like the only reason I'm saying all of this is because the DNC is you know, giving me like a $20,000 check every month. I'm not. I am currently in my one bedroom apartment in California, where I have lived for the last 7 years. I started doing this as my job 6 years ago, full time. I have not upgraded my living space because I do not make enough money to do so. I barely make enough money to survive with having this as my full time job. And like, I do it by doing sponsorships with like sex toy companies. I do make some money from my Patreon account. It's $1 a month, patreon.com/AustinArcher. And I've never been paid by AIPAC. If you knew anything about my content, you would know that like I have made so many videos about how Israel sucks and the IDF sucks. Every time someone like you, like a far left chud who's indistinguishable from a MAGA chud, accuses me of being like a genocidal shill and shilling for Israel, I always send them this list of every video I've ever made where I am unequivocally pro-Palestine and where I like unequivocally state my unequivocal position that what is happening in Palestine is an absolute humanitarian nightmare and a genocide, and that I am fully in support of the Palestinian people and the cause of Palestinian safety and liberation. And I will put it in the description of this video right now for anyone watching if you're curious. So you can go through that list and you can watch all like 70 or 80 hours or whatever it is at this point to confirm what my stance is. Find me one video where I ever say anything even remotely pro Netanyahu, pro Israel, where I ever even remotely run cover for the war crimes of the Israeli army. You won't be able to do it because it doesn't exist, you little dipshit. Cam says, IDK, man, seems pretty quivocal to me. What is quivocal? Like, do you know what words mean? What is quivocal about saying, I unconditionally, unequivocally denounce the state of Israel, the IDF, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli government, and denounce their genocide of the Palestinian people, and I unequivocally want the end of the human suffering there, and the freedom and the safety and the liberation and self-determination of those people. This is what I mean when I say, like, the far online left, these people are indistinguishable from MAGA, because it doesn't matter how many times you tell a MAGA chud, like, I don't care about Bill Clinton. I don't care about Bill Clinton. They're like, yeah, you're crying that Bill Clinton is in the Epstein files. You love Bill Clinton. And you're like, I don't care. Take Bill Clinton to jail. And they're like, oh my God, you're obsessed with Bill Clinton. You love him. You love Bill Clinton so much. And it's like, that's these people. Doesn't matter what I say. Doesn't matter how many times I say it. Doesn't matter that there is not a single record ever of me saying anything, even remotely in support of Israel. They're like, whoa, AIPAC shill. He loves Israel. It's fucking insane how rhetorically similar they are to MAGA. Victrolia Brown says, been a fan since the brilliance of Turtleneck and Blazer. What a throwback. Thanks for being here for so long. That's so fun. And thank you for your long-term continued support. Determined Optimist says, accelerationist lefties never have a real plan to power CPAP, med refrigeration, and to heat baby formula. They don't have a real plan for a lot of things. You're not wrong. So first of all, that sucks. And then second of all, it's just like, you don't actually know how any of this would work feasibly. You've never actually spent any meaningful time thinking about what the reality of living through some kind of prolonged armed revolution would actually look like, and you're not gonna do it anyway. So just fucking knock it off. Knock off the cosplaying and just help us out. You're not even gonna do your thing. So just help us out. You know what? I think we're gonna call it there. Thank you so much for a very lively discussion in the TikTok Digital Studio audience. If you want to see that full unedited discussion, you know where to go. It's linked in the description. It's patreon.com/AustinArcher. That's where all the cool people are at. Let's wrap this one up. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music, also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, and you know that that's linked in the description. Right now, my limited edition double vinyl is on sale for 50% off. I'm trying to get rid of all of them. I got too many boxes left over from when I made the thing, and I don't want them anymore. So you should go over there and buy it for what is way too cheap. I'm selling them for way too few dollars, but I want you to have them. I want them to exist at your house as part of your collection instead of just sitting in a box in my house. So go check that out. Shout out to the Patreon patrons. We love you so much. Shout out to the TikTok Digital Studio audience. Thank you so much for your contribution to the show. Okay, that's it. We will see you next time. Until then, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and I love you so very, very much. The less I know about.